Okay, so we start? We're good to go? Let's start. Fine. So, this is going to be giving two sets of classes. There's the Sunday classes and the Wednesday classes. The Sunday classes are going to be on the topic of zoology, animals and the Torah. And the Wednesday classes are going to be on the topic of science and Torah. Now, if you want to get an idea of all the classes, what they're going to be, all the classes I have available, then I'm going to send you a link. Hold on a second. Copy link location. There we go. Oops. I send that to everyone. Hold on. Okay, now that link takes you to a list of all my classes, about 45 classes or so. I'm going to be starting off with eight zoology classes on Sunday and eight science classes on Wednesday, and then we'll see where things go after that. So as you can see, if you click on that, I'm not sure if you're able to open it up in another window right now. But basically, these science classes, so some of them are going to be on the famous topics like age of the universe and evolution and so on. Others are going to be on topics such as the scientific knowledge of Chazal. And what I'm doing tonight, this afternoon for some of you, is the topic of a topic to do with astronomy. It's actually a topic that I'm pretty sure, not only have I never spoken about it before, but I don't think anybody has ever given a share in this topic before. And I think the reasons for that will become clear. Oh, hi, Jay. Glad you could join us. Okay, so the topic is basically Chazal, the sages of the Talmud, their view of the universe, of the basic structure of the entire universe, and how that clashed with the astronomy of their era. Okay, so this is obviously it's going to be quite a controversial topic, and you see in terms of giving a share over the internet, so the advantage is that really cuts down on the travel time. The disadvantage is that I can't see my audience, except for Marjorie, and it's difficult to gauge, you know, where people are, what people are used to, whether I'm using, whether I'm, you know, with the audience or so on, if the audience is following me. It's quite difficult, actually, to give a lecture without that kind of feedback. So if at any point people are not following what I'm saying, or if I use a Hebrew word you didn't understand, or whatever it is, please feel free to speak up, or you can type in the chat box and tell me what you'd like me to clarify. Okay. So let's start. Let's pull up. I'm going to put up another window here with some text. Hold on. Okay. Everyone see a window pop up with some text? You can maybe just type in the chat box. You can just type yes. So this is a topic. Oh, thanks, Sean. So this is a section of the Gemara that's quite challenging, superficially at least. It's quite challenging to understand. It's quite cryptic. It uses terminology that we're not familiar with. And one of my biggest regrets is that it's only really this year that I studied it in great depth. Because, as I'm sure many of you know, I got into a spot of bother with my books a couple of years ago, when three of them were put in cherem and three of them were banned. And there was a furious debate over the issues then. And had I been more knowledgeable about this topic back then, I would certainly have had a much easier time of things. But better late than never. So now what we're going to do tonight is study this topic, these few lines of Gemara, which seem very weird and complex, but we're going to figure out what's going on in them. So this is from the Gemara in Pesachim. It says, the rabbi taught, the sages of Israel say that the sphere is fixed and the constellations revolve within it. And the sages of the nations say that the sphere revolves around the earth and the constellations are fixed within it. Now, what is going on in those lines? So, we have to realize we're going way back in time here. We're going 2,000 years back in time. And we have to look at different views of the universe. The view of the universe held by the Jewish sages, by the sages of Israel, was as follows. Now, it may sound shocking to you, but we're going to back it up and explain it more soon. So just bear with me for now. The Jewish sages had an idea that the world is flat. Right? The world is flat, maybe a disk, maybe another shape, but it's flat. And the rest of the universe is basically a dome or a series of concentric domes over the top of the Earth. And within that dome, there are stars that move around. The stars move around within that dome. Right? They held a view that the dome itself is not like it's not a solid structure. It's some kind of amorphous structure, some kind of fluid or gaseous structure that things can move around within. So the stars, the constellations, are moving around within that dome. When they say the sphere is fixed, what it means is that the sky, the universe, is a dome fixed above the world, above the Earth, and the stars move around within that dome. That's the view of the sages of Israel. The sages of the nations, which here is presenting the view of the non-Jewish scholars, which is a view that was expounded by a famous scientist called Ptolemy, and he had a book called The Almagest, where he presented the non-Jewish view of the universe. And that view was that the Earth is round, it's spherical, like a ball, which is correct, and the rest of the universe is a big sphere, right? A big sphere around the entire Earth. Right? So nobody has this idea of there being outer space, you know, extending for light years and stars scattered in it. The views of the non-Jews is that the universe is a sphere around the Earth, and the constellations are fixed within it. Right? That the stars are embedded in the sphere. Right? In other words, so whereas according to the sages of Israel, the sphere, well, it was just a dome for them. It was half a sphere. It was a dome. According to their view, the view of the sages of Israel, that dome was not solid. The stars were not embedded within it. Right? According to their view, this dome is made of a gaseous or fluid substance that stars can move around in. According to the non-Jews, the sphere is an actual solid, more solid, you know, crystalline substance, and the stars are embedded within it. So if the stars are embedded within it, how do the stars move? The answer is, according to the sages of the nations, it's the entire sphere that's moving. Right? The entire sphere is rotating around the world. Okay, everyone with me so far? If you could just type in a yes in the chat box so I know that everyone's following. If you have any questions, please ask them now, because things are going to get even more complicated. Okay, very good. Now, okay, Reuven Meir raised a question that didn't the Zohar knew that the earth was a ball? So this is going to sidetrack us a little bit. First of all, the Zohar, so the question is, you know, when did the Zohar date from exactly? Who wrote it? I don't want to get into that now, okay? If we've got time, we'll go into that later, but right now I'd rather not get into that topic. As let's just play it out. We'll see how the Gemara plays out. Okay. So now in the Gemara we have Revi, which is short for Rabbi Yehuda Hanasi, and he's the one who compiled the Mishnah, and he throws out a challenge against the view of the non-Jewish scholars. So Revi says a response to their words is that we've never found the Great Bear constellation in the south, and the Scorpion constellation in the north. Right, so this, you know, this is the point at which many people their eyes start to glaze over when they look at this piece of the Gemara, because we really don't understand these kinds of things. What's going on is as follows. What he's talking about is that the way that Rabbi Hanasi conceived of their view is that if the sphere is revolving, it should be basically moving around all over the place. Right, how is it that the stars follow very distinct patterns? And to which Rav Acha bar Yaakov replies, maybe it's like the axle of a millstone or the hinges of a door socket. You know, maybe it's that there is some kind of axis, some kind of axle around which the entire cosmic sphere rotates, which is why the stars always follow a particular path. Now, in this paragraph of the Gemara, so, you know, how do you know that interpretation that I just gave of it is really the right interpretation? Is this really what's going on, that the sages of Israel thought the world was flat and the universe is a dome with stars moving around in it, and the non-Jewish sages said that the world was round and the universe is a sphere where the entire sphere moves around it? Is that really what's going on? there have been there are people who say, no, maybe there's something else going on in the Gemara, and they try, and there's all kinds of different explanations. So one way in which, I mean, there's two ways in which we can be sure that this explanation that I just gave you is the right explanation. Number one, as we'll see, it's the way in which traditionally this Gemara was explained, right? The Gaonim, the Rishonim, right? The scholars of medieval times, this is how they explain the Gemara. The second way in which we know this is the right explanation is that if you're able to scroll down, I don't know if everyone can scroll down individually, I'm scrolling down for you. If we look at what non-Jews of the time were saying, right? Shalom, how's it work? Do I have to scroll down? I just scroll down for everyone. I don't know if the other people have to independently scroll down or if I just did it for them. Can everyone see a paragraph beginning, but you will? Okay. So this is a quote from a book called, a book by Cosmas Indicopleustes. Indicopleustes, okay. He was a monk from the 6th century, and he wrote a book about astronomy. So he's writing more or less about the same time as the Gemara. And we see that his whole discussion, he uses the same kind of arguments that appear in the Gemara. So that is a dead giveaway. That is a dead giveaway that the Gemara is using, is talking about the same thing that he's talking about, because he uses the exact same terminology. Now, his book was called Christian Topography, and it was an all-out assault on those people who believe that the world is round. Now, Cosmas the monk, he believed that the world was flat, so he had this book, which is a diatribe, a polemic against those who believe the world is round. And here's what he says. But you will most effectually rebuke them if you say, why does that sphere of yours not revolve from the north to the south, or from some other quarter to its opposite? And that's exactly the objection that Rebbe, that Rebbe Hanasi had to those people who were saying that the world is round and the universe is a sphere revolving around it. That's exactly the same objection. And Cosmas continues to preempt the objection that Rav Acha ben Yaakov raised. He says, but if again it rolls and rotates always in the same spot without moving from place to place, then it must be upheld by supports like a turner's lathe or an artificial globe or an axle like a machine or a wagon. And if so, then we must again inquire by what the supports and axles are themselves upheld, and so on ad infinitum. When these problems then concerning the nature of things are discussed, there remains the conclusion, as we said before, that the heaven is fixed and does not revolve. Okay. Irvin Meir is saying that Rebbe didn't live in the 5th century. Yeah, he was earlier, but it's still, you know, more or less a time period. And the point is that we see he's using the exact same terminology that the Gemara was using. So that's how we know that the Gemara, that's one of the ways in which we know that the Gemara was talking about the same kind of thing. Right, that he's saying that how can it be that the entire universe revolves on an axis around the Earth? You know, what holds that axis in place? Right, so he's insisting that the universe does not revolve around the Earth. The Earth is flat. The universe is a dome above the Earth, and the stars are embedded in that dome. Right, which is exactly the view of the rabbis. Okay, So that's one way, like I mentioned. The other way in which we know that that's what's going on is that this is how the way it's traditionally understood. Okay, so the sages of Israel, they have this view that the earth is flat, the universe is a dome, but not a solid dome, a dome in which stars can move around. And the sages of the nations say that, no, the world is round, the universe is a sphere which itself turns around the earth, and the stars are embedded in that sphere, and they turn as that sphere turns. Okay, now, the Gemara then continues to relate another debate, which is, we're going to see, is related to this one. The sages of Israel say, during the day, the sun travels below the firmament, and at night, above the firmament. And the scholars of the nations say, during the day, the sun travels below the firmament, and at night, below the ground. Now, in order to understand what's going on here, I have a handy-dandy picture that I'm going to share. Oh, no, not that one. Hold on. Okay. You all see that picture? Okay, let's just go back to these questions we have here. Ruben Mayer wanted to know if any where these other explanations of the Gemara are. Offhand, I can't recall, but I have... oh, no, I can tell you... let's see, where did I see it? In the Art Scroll, yeah. In the Art Scroll Gemara, you'll see other explanations. Why are stars moving along fixed paths be easier to believe than a fixed sphere? Good question. I don't know the answer to that. Okay. Oops. Sorry. Wait, let's move this attendee list down. Okay, I see one or two people who joined late. Hope you're able to follow what's going on. If you have questions, let me know. Okay, so the second debate is talking about the path of the sun at night. And again, it relates to the first one. Because again, we're talking about the difference between the cosmology, the view of the universe that was held by Chazal, which was that of ancient Babylonian cosmology, and the view held by the sages of the nations, which is the Ptolemaic cosmology. So, according to the sages, okay, the sun, right, rises in the east. Is that green arrow? Rises in the east, goes high in the sky, sets in the west. Then when it sets, it then starts changing direction. It moves horizontally, right? Instead of descending vertically, it starts moving horizontally, goes through the firmament. And you have to remember the firmament, in their view, the rakia, the firmament is a dome, a huge, thick dome above the earth, in which the stars are moving around in this dome. So the sun goes all the way through the thickness of the firmament, and then it starts rising up behind the firmament. Now, even though the stars are moving in the firmament, but when something's all the way on the other side of the firmament, you can't see it. So that's why we can't see the sun at night. At night, the sun is going behind the firmament until before dawn, when again it changes direction, comes back horizontally along the ground towards us, then rises again in the east. Okay, one second, let me just change the size of some of these windows here. Okay. So that's the view of the sages of Israel of where the sun goes at night. According to the dome picture of things, do the stars also go behind the dome during the day? No. I don't think they do. Why don't we see the stars during the day according to that view? I think it's just because their light... Oh, the same reason that we don't see the stars during the day right now. Because the sun just drowns out the light from them. Bein Hashmashay, so that literal meaning of Bein Hashmashas? I'm not sure, but we're going to get to that soon when we discuss Bein Utam's view. By the way, feel free to speak up. You don't have to write your questions in the chat box. How do we see the moon at night? Okay, hold on. How do we see the moon at night? Well, the moon and the stars are in this dome, right? They're on the face of the firmament. But during the day, the sun is so bright that it drowns out the light from them. I mean, that's true according to both modern science and the ancient view. Why certain constellations appear at certain seasons? I'm not sure about that. Okay, so that's the view of the sages of Israel. And the scholars of the nations say that during the day the sun travels below the firmament and at night below the ground. Right, so in their view, during the day the sun rises in the east, sets in the west, and at night it goes around on the other side of the planet. Right, it goes underneath the earth, rises on the other side. Right, which is basically correct, except that, of course, they had a view in which the Earth is at the center of the universe, whereas now we know that the Sun is not the center of the universe. Right? But this Gemara itself is not... The dispute here between the sages of Israel and Levi is not a dispute about geocentrism or heliocentrism. It's a dispute about the very basic structure of the universe. Right? Is the Earth flat with the sky and the universe being a dome, or is the Earth round with the sky and the universe being a sphere encompassing it? Okay, wait, move this down. Hold on a second. Okay, so this is the dispute they have about where the sun goes at night. And now, once again, we have Rebbe giving his verdict on it. But what's fascinating here is that before we had Levy challenging their view, the view of the non-Jewish scholars. Right? Before, Levy was defending the Babylonian cosmology, which was that held by Chazal, and he was challenging the Ptolemaic cosmology, which was that of the sages of the nations. Here, Levy decides that, in fact, the sages of the nations are correct. Levy said, "Their words seem more correct than ours, for during the day the wellsprings are cool, and at night they steam, which means due to their being heated by the sun passing beneath them." So what's going on here? Levy said that it seems that the non-Jews are correct, that the sun, that at night the sun does not go up above behind the sky, but in fact at night the sun goes on the other side of the world. How do we know? Because during the day, you know, we have bodies of water which seem cool, and in the early morning you see mist rising up from streams and ponds and so on. You see a mist rising up from them. So he interpreted that mist as being steam by the waters being heated. And he says that must be that they're being heated by the sun coming from underneath. Okay, that the sun is on the other side of the earth, heating them up from underneath. And that's why you see at night, you see a mist rising up from bodies of water. So here, instead of Rebbe defending the view of Chazal, he says it seems that the non-Jews are correct and that the Jewish sages were wrong. Okay. So, already you can see why this isn't the kind of topic of that people normally give lectures about. Apart from the fact that it's kind of complex to understand what's going on, it's a very challenging piece. You have Chazal, you have the sages of Israel holding a view of the universe, which from our point of view is obviously wrong. Not only that, but you have Rabbi Hanasi himself saying, look, the non-Jews are correct. So, what I want to do is we're going to go through and see how this was interpreted over history, and it's fascinating to see how this was interpreted. But first, let's just look at some other discussions on the Gemara, which also relate to this, because this topic appears in a few times. Okay, let's look down at this one. It was taught in a bright... Okay, Rav Meir said, what's the problem? We learn in the Gemara there is wisdom in the nations, not just Torah. Okay, I'm not saying everybody has a problem with this Gemara, but certainly some people have a problem with this Gemara. We'll see. Okay, let's look at this second piece, paragraph, which is from Bava Basra. It was taught in a brighter. Eliezer says the world is like an exedra. An exedra is an old Roman building, which is basically like a room, but with one wall missing. Okay, so the world is like an exedra, and the northern side is not enclosed, and when the sun reaches the northwestern corner, it bends back and rises above the firmament. Okay, let's try to point it here. And Rabbi Yeshua says the world is like a tent, and the northern side is enclosed, and when the sun reaches the northwestern corner, it circles around and returns on the other side of the dome. So, this is both going in the view of where does the sun go at night when it sets. Let's go back to our drawing of the firmament. Right, so you have the sun rising in the east, setting in the west, goes through the firmament, and then where does it go? So according to Eliezer, it goes up above. The first opinion goes up above the top of the firmament. Right? Whereas according to Rabbi Yeshua, it goes kind of... could do with a 3D model here. It goes around the northern side. It's not going up. It's going horizontally around the far side of the world. Okay? If you ever saw the movie The Truman Show, right, where the lead character Truman, you know, he's living within this huge dome, and he sails to the edge of it. Right, so, and he's going around the edge of it, trying to find a door, trying to find his way out. Right, so that's where the sun is going, according to Rabbi Yeshua. It's going around the northern side, but at ground level, on the far side of the firmament, so it can get back to the east to come back through the firmament again in the morning and come up. Right, so just another example of where you see what Chazal's view of the universe was. And there was a little bit of dispute as to how the sun gets back to that side, but it wasn't going around the other side of the earth. It was going around either the top or around the side, but not below. And again, we see that same thing discussed by our 6th century monk Cosmas. Cosmas, that was his name, suitable name, where he says the same idea. Yes, right here. Okay, these things being so, we shall say, agreeably to what we find in divine scripture, that the sun issuing from the east traverses the sky in the south and ascends northwards, and becomes visible to the whole of the inhabited world. But as the northern and western summit intervenes, it produces night in the ocean beyond this earth of ours, then also in the earth beyond the ocean. Then afterwards, when the sun is in the west, when he is hidden in the highest portion of the earth, and runs his course over the ocean through the northern parts, his presence there makes it night for us. Until in describing his orbit, he comes again to the east, and again ascending the southern sky and illuminates the inhabited world. As the divine scripture says through the divine Solomon, the sun riseth, and the sun goeth down, and hasteth to its own placeth. Rising there, he goeth to the southeth, and wheeleth his circuit, and the wind turneth round to his circuit. It's great for getting a lift. Okay, so again, you know, he's talking about the same idea, that when the sun sets, it doesn't go on the other side of the planet. It goes round the firmament, and the cosmos here takes the same view as the second view that we just cited, that instead of going over the top of the dome, it goes horizontally around the northern side of the dome. Okay, everyone with me so far? So that's how we see in the Gemara the difference between the view of cosmology held by Chazal, by the Jewish sages, and the view of cosmology held by the non-Jewish sages, the Ptolemaic view. And that we have this critical point that Rabbi Yehuda Hanasi, says that it seems that the non-Jewish sages are correct. Okay, everyone with me so far? Any questions? Can you just write a quick text in the chat box to know if you're with me, if you have any questions? By the way, Sammy, is that Sammy Katz? Okay. All right. Okay, I don't know why this thing keeps moving. Let's put it back in place. There we go. All right, now, what I want to do now is I'm going to look how this Gemara was how people reacted to it over the ages. Okay, so first of all, I just want to backtrack a little bit. This view of Chazal, that the universe is a dome, right? The firmament is a dome, and the sun and the stars move around this dome, and the sun goes behind it at night. It's also reflected in davening. Anyone want to tell me where we see it in davening? Give you a clue. Shabbos davening. Anyone? Beulah? Anyone? Shabbos Shacharis. No, Shacharis. Oh, it could be, yeah, it's in Maariv too, actually, kind of. But it's most explicitly in Shacharis. We say, Uvokeh Chaloni Rakia. We say that, just before the Brachas of Kriyashma, we say that that Hashem, pierces windows in the firmament out of which the sun comes. And that's the idea of the sun penetrating the firmament. Okay, fine. So let's see how this Gemara, how Jews approached it over history. This is where things get really interesting. And you're going to see why I mentioned at the beginning that, you know, I wish I'd really learned this topic a lot more thoroughly years ago when my books were banned, because this is really the key to everything. So Rambam says as follows. I'm going to read out to you here from Rambam. He says, it is one of the ancient beliefs widespread amongst both the philosophers and the ordinary people, that the motions of spheres produce mighty and fearful sounds. We don't need to get into that. He's just speaking about another aspect of cosmology, which Chazal believed, and so on. And he says that Aristotle has disproved it. Okay. And then he says as follows: you must not find it far-fetched that Aristotle differs from the opinion of our sages in this. For this theory, the theory he's talking about, which is that the spheres make noise and so on, stem from the belief that the sphere is fixed and the constellations move in it. And you already know that in such matters of astronomy, the matter has been decided in favor of the Gentile scholars over the sages. But you know what I'm going to do? I'm going to cut and paste this quote into the chat box. Let's see if we can do that. Hold on. Yeah, see that? Here's a quote from Rambam. Just add one more sentence to it. This is from the Mora. There's a continuation of it. So this is a very important source. Right, here you have Rambam pointing out that Chazal's knowledge of science here was mistaken, right? That they were wrong. Now you might think, well, what's the big deal of Rambam saying it? You know, isn't it obvious from the Gemara? As we're going to see later, not everybody thought it was obvious from the Gemara. But Rambam figured it was obvious from the Gemara, and he also mentions elsewhere about how Chazal's knowledge of science wasn't something that they knew from divine inspiration. It wasn't a received tradition from Sinai. It was what people that thought in those days. And sometimes it was just what they thought, not necessarily what the non-Jews thought. Alright, so, excuse me. So, here's where Rambam says that, you know, he learns the Gemara at face value, that the sages here were mistaken, right? That the non-Jewish scholars were correct. Now, there's two interesting differences here in Rambam from the Gemara. Anyone notice two differences here? Right, the first is that Rambam says as follows. He writes that it's explicitly stated that the wise men of the nations have defeated them. Now, in the Gemara, that's not exactly how it was phrased. In the Gemara, all Rebbe said was that their words seem more correct than ours. Right, in Hebrew, it's nirin divreihem midvoreinu. Rambam already makes it much stronger. Rambam says that the non-Jews were correct. Right? So, you know, in other words, the way Rebbe said it was a bit more tentative. Rebbe said, it seems that they're correct. Nirin divreihem midvoreinu. Rambam makes it much stronger. Rambam has Rebbe saying, they were right and we're wrong. So what's going on? Was Rambam, you know, paraphrasing the Gemara? Was he saying it from memory? Well, the fact is that there were others who also had this text of the Gemara. We know that sometimes there's various variant texts of the Gemara. So it seems that there was a variant text in which Rebbe didn't just say that their words seem more correct, but in which Rebbe said they're right, definitively, they're right. Now, the second weird thing going on here in this Rambam is that Rambam, you know, when Rambam says that the Gemara decided in favor of the Gentile scholars, he relates that to the discussion about the sphere being fixed and the constellations moving. Right? Now, in our Gemara, that's not the context in which Rebbe says it. In our Gemara, Rebbe decides in favor of the non-Jewish scholars in the second argument about where the sun goes at night. So how is it that Rambam is attaching Rebbe's decision, you know, in favor of the non-Jewish scholars? Why is Rambam attaching that to the first dispute when the Gemara has it with the second dispute? Throw that question out. Any answers? Right. Reuven Meir's got it right. It's a worldview issue. In other words, the two disputes are fundamentally linked. Right, these two disputes are fundamentally connected. The Chazal had a view in which the Earth is flat, the universe is a dome, and stars move within that dome, and the sun goes on the other side of that dome at night. The non-Jews had a view that the world is round, the universe is a sphere around it. That sphere moves around, you know, it moves in both sides of the world, and the sun, therefore, is on the other side of the world at night, right? So it's just two aspects of the same cosmology. So that's why when Rebbe concedes in the second discussion, he's conceding also in the first one. When Rebbe concedes that the non-Jews are correct, he's not just conceding that the sun goes on the other side of the world at night. He's conceding their whole worldview. He's saying that the ancient Babylonian cosmology, I realize now, is wrong. And the correct cosmology is that of Ptolemy, is that of the non-Jewish scholars, in which the world is round, the universe goes on all sides of the earth, and the sun at night goes on the other side of the earth. Okay, now Rambam, excuse me, Rambam of course is the paradigm of rationalism. Right? Rambam is the ultimate rationalist, so it's not surprising that he was willing to learn this Gemara at face value. But you don't have to be a rationalist in order to see here that Chazal were being Chazal were not correct, because the Gemara, it's so explicit. It's so explicit. You have Levi saying their words seem more correct than ours. You don't have to be a rationalist to say here that, well, it looks like Chazal were making a scientific mistake. All you have to be is somebody who's willing to take the Gemara at face value and not bend over backwards to reinterpret it. So it's not just Rambam who learnt this Gemara at face value. We also find Rav Shri Ogon, Rav Haigon, Rav Yishai Titranius, Tosafos Arid, the Tosafos Rav Eliezer of Metz. He has an interesting view. he discusses a halacha that when you're kneading matzah, when you're baking matzah, and you're using water to knead the dough, you can only use water that's already been drawn, that's been sitting in a container overnight. You can't use water that's been sitting in the ground overnight. And he says the reason for that halacha is because the halacha is based on the assumption that the sun at night is heating the water from the other side of the world. And he says that, you know, since we have that halacha, which is based on the idea of the sun heating the water from beneath, that shows that we have accepted the view of the non-Jewish scholars. Right? So there you have this Tosafist, right? He's not some rationalist from Spain or Egypt, he's a Tosafist from Ashkenaz, and he's saying that, you know, here's a halacha which is based on the fact that the non-Jewish scholars were correct. And that view is quoted also by the Rosh, by Rav Yochum ben Meshulam, Moshe ben Yaakov of Kusi, the Ritva, Rabbeinu Manoach, right? Many Rishonim all quoting this view that the non-Jewish scholars were correct. Right, the Jewish scholars were incorrect. It was the non-Jewish scholars who were correct. So you know, it's amazing. I plan hopefully to give a class about the controversy of my books. But as many of you know, one of the main issues involved in it was the question about Chazal, the sages of the Talmud. You know, is it possible to say that they were ever mistaken in their statements about the natural world? Now, is it possible to say that, or do we say that whenever they made any statements about the natural world, that was based on Ruach HaKodesh and divine inspiration or a tradition from Sinai? And what's interesting is that with this Gemara, you know, at the time, I said, well, you know, it's true, a minority, but some very significant people who said that the sages of the Talmud were not infallible. There was Rambam, there was his son Rabbeinu Avraham, there was Rav Shimshon Rafael Hirsch. You know, just a few figures, but still significant figures. And some of my opponents were saying that it's just an aberrant minority view. But what we see in this Gemara is that it's a majority view. Right? We have countless mainstream Rishonim, mainstream Torah scholars of the medieval period, who learned this section of the Gemara at face value. That Rabbi Yehuda HaNasi was conceding that the non-Jewish scholars are correct. Right? And then we can go on through time. The Yitzhak Arama, you know, Akedas Yitzhak, also discusses how the non-Jewish scholars were correct. He already gives us somewhat of an apology for it. The Yitzhak Arama says that the reason why the non-Jewish scholars were correct is that the Jewish scholars spend all their time learning Torah, so they don't really get a chance to become experts in science. The non-Jews don't study Torah. The wisdom that they're studying is the sciences, and that's why they gain a greater degree of expertise. We come to an interesting thing in the 16th century with David Gans. Now, David Gans was a very interesting figure. He was a disciple of Maharal. He lived in Prague. He was born in 1541, died in 1613. He was very into astronomy, and he wrote some very interesting Jewish books about astronomy, about geography, and so on. And he says excuse me. He says he had a meeting with the famous astronomer Tycho Brahe. Now, he actually worked in Tycho Brahe's laboratory, observatory. Right? At that time in Prague, in the 16th century, so that was really the time when the heyday of the new astronomy. Right? You had Copernicus, you had Kepler, you had Tycho Brahe. Now, Tycho Brahe was the astronomer, one of the astronomers that David Gans had connections with. Tycho Brahe disagreed with Copernicus. Right? Copernicus had this idea that the sun is the center of the universe and the earth goes around the sun. And Tycho Brahe said that's not correct. The earth is the center of the universe. The sun goes around the earth. But he was willing to concede that the other planets go around the sun. Anyway, that doesn't really concern us here. Tycho Brahe said to David Gans that the rabbis of the Gemara were correct, that they should never have given in. And he was talking about that first dispute about the constellations. And he said that one of Tycho Brahe's chidushim, one of his insights into astronomy, was the idea that that the stars move around in the ether, and the stars are not embedded in any kind of crystalline sphere. So he says, look, the sages of the Talmud were correct, because the sages of the Talmud were the ones who said that the stars move around freely, and it was the non-Jewish scholars who had this, you know, Ptolemaic view that the stars are embedded in spheres, in crystalline spheres. And Tycho Brahe says, no, there's no crystalline spheres, the stars move around. And the sages of the Talmud were correct, they should never have given in. And, you know, David Gans brings this proudly to show that, you know, even when Chazal thought they were wrong, they were really right. You know, it's like the Noda Yehuda said in his End of His Days. He said, you know, twice in my life I made a mistake. I thought I was wrong. Really, I was right. Right? So, David Gans, quoting Brahe, says that Chazal was correct. Of course they were correct. Even when they conceded, they were actually correct. So is this true to say? In a way, yes. In a way, not. In a way, yes. You know, it's true that the one slight advantage that the ancient Babylonian cosmology had over the Ptolemy's model is that, yes, they had this idea that the stars move around by themselves and they're not embedded within a crystalline sphere that revolves around the Earth. Yeah, you know, in that aspect, they were correct. But on the other hand, they weren't saying that because they were modeling the universe as we know it today. They were saying that because that was part of the entire Babylonian cosmological worldview, in which the reason why there's no big sphere moving around the Earth is that there's no other side to the Earth. You know, the Earth is flat and the universe ends there. Possibly you have Gehenna below it. It was, you know, they had the stars moving around freely, but only within a dome above the Earth. So, you know, when Tycho Brahe said that the sages of the Talmud were correct, I guess he didn't really understand what the sages of the Talmud were saying. In a way, the sages of the Talmud were correct, but it's not as though the cosmological system that they were presenting, it's not as though that was correct. Okay, so moving on through history, you have towards the period of the more recent centuries, like the last, say, four centuries, where rationalism was really on the decline, mysticism was on the increase. So, yet you still find people who are learning this Gemara at face value, and saying that the Jewish sages were mistaken, and the reason being that, you know, it's pretty explicit in the Gemara. So you have, for example, Rav Yitzhak Lanfranti. He was a Rebbe of the Ramchal. And he writes in a few places about how the sages have special insights into the natural world based on divine inspiration and so on. They have Ruach HaKodesh. They have traditions from Sinai. Don't trust the scientists. Right, so we have several statements like that in his work. And yet, nevertheless, when it comes to this Gemara, he says, but here, the non-Jews were correct. Right, the non-Jews were right. The sages of Israel were wrong. The sun does not go on the other side of the sky at night. The sun goes on the other side of the world. Then you have even Rav Moshe Shik, Maharam Shik. Right? He was a disciple of Chassam Sofer, Rav Moshe Sofer. Right? Now, you can't get more of a traditionalist than Rav Moshe Sofer. Right? He had this famous line, HaChadash Asa Min HaTorah, anything that's new is wrong. Right? A staunch traditionalist. You know, the kind of person who's not going to give way to give away at all to people challenging tradition, challenging the authority of the sages. And yet one of his primary disciples, Maharam Shik, quotes this Gemara, discusses it, and says that, you know, look, you know, Rabbi Yehuda Hanasi judged the non-Jewish scholars seem correct, because, and how could he say this? Because when the Jewish sages said that the sun goes behind the sky at night, they didn't have divine inspiration, they didn't receive its tradition from Sinai, it was just something they'd figured out, and therefore they were able to be wrong. Okay, and even, I think the most extreme example of somebody who is very, very far from rationalism, you know, very embedded in the whole mystical worldview, and yet still accepts the face value of this Gemara, is the Ben Ish Chai, right, the Sephardi Kabbalist, Chacham Yosef Chaim, born in 1832, died 1909. And interestingly, he has, in some of his early writings, he has a whole mystical interpretation of this Gemara, in which he says that Chazal were right, and they really had a deep mystical meaning. But in his later writings, he echoes Rambam's approach. Right? He says that when Chazal spoke about the sun going behind the sky at night, that was just their own assessment. It was their own intellectual assessment according to whatever seemed to them correct in the science of astronomy. He says, and therefore, you know, now it's possible to see otherwise. Here, let me actually, I'm going to cut and paste his words into the chat browser here. Hold on a second. Okay. So, yeah, know that regarding what Rabbi Eliezer and Rabbi Yeshua say here regarding the motion of the sun was said according to their intellectual assessment, according to whatever seemed true to them in the science of astronomy. And they did not determine these things and establish them as true. Rather, each went according to whatever appeared to him in accordance with his principles of astronomy. They did not say these things as tradition from their teachers. Let's see how the quote continues. Cutting and pasting here. And therefore, nowadays, when the principles of astronomy are widespread, and they have devised observational tools for the stars and constellations on the globe and the elevations of the sun, they have seen and known many things that can be genuinely determined and universally agreed upon, such as that the sun travels below the earth at night in the other side of the world. Right? Now we know that's the case. And if the sages of Israel said this from their tradition, that the sun goes behind the sky at night, right? How could it be said that the words of the non-Jewish scholars seem more correct? And how could one bring a proof from the argument regarding steaming waters to contradict matters that were received by tradition, heaven forbid? Right? In the Gemara, you have Rebbe bringing a scientific reason as to why the non-Jews are right. So that shows that he did not regard the Jewish position as being one received from Sinai. If the Jewish position was one received from Sinai, you're not going to bring a scientific challenge to it. Rather, it's certain that the sages of Israel did not determine these things to establish them as true. Rather, they said that their intellectual assessment suggested it according to the science of astronomy that they possessed in their era. And they only suggested it as a possibility. In other words, I mean, you know, what does it mean to say they suggested it as a possibility? They were probably fairly sure of it, but the point is that they weren't religiously sure of it. In other words, they weren't using their ecclesiastical authority to say this must be true. They weren't saying this is true on our authority as sages of the Torah, as transmitters of God's wisdom. They were saying that this seems to us true according to our own scientific research. Right? And if it's according to our own scientific research, then other scientific research can supersede it. Right? So, okay, Reuben Meir is asking, why did they discuss it in the Gemara? What use is it to us religiously? The answer is, well, as we see, you know, there are certain halachas that are based on it. And we're going to come to that. We're not going to have time to do that today, but next time we'll discuss that it is relevant to certain halachas. Okay, so you know, sometimes you have halachas that themselves relate to science. And this is one of them. Okay, so here you see that, you know, not only did rationalists such as Rambam, or being Avraham ben Rambam, learn this Gemara as showing that Chazal's knowledge of science was not perfect and was fallible, but even, you know, this was a mainstream view throughout the centuries, even amongst non-rationalists. Right, it was a view amongst most of the Rishonim. It was even a view that you find amongst staunch traditionalists like Rav Moshe Shick, even amongst Kabbalists like the Ben Ish Chai. All saying it, because the Gemara is fairly explicit that way. And because the Gemara fairly explicitly says that Chazal believe that the sun goes on the other side of the sky at night, and Levi says that was a mistaken view. And we know now that it is a mistaken view. So it's not surprising that you find so many authorities who take this Gemara at face value and say that the Chazal did not know that scientific error. And yet, you know, notwithstanding that, as we're going to see next time, we're going to see that even though this Gemara seems pretty clear and pretty straightforward, but there were two distinct groups of people who had two very different approaches to this whole Gemara. Okay, so it's going to have to be next week that we'll continue to see these two alternative approaches. Let's just deal with some questions that we didn't deal with yet. Halacha is based on mistaken science. Yeah, but when a halacha is based on mistaken science, it's not so clear that halacha should change. We're going to have a class on that. Any other questions from anyone? Also, since this was the very first class that I gave as part of it in this internet framework, so I'd appreciate your comments on whether you thought that it worked well, the whole style of it, with the sources and so on. If you have any comments like that, I'd also like to hear them. Okay, dog digestion times, we're going to have to leave that for now. Sammy, great. List of sources. Okay, basically I've written this whole thing out as an article that I'm planning to publish somewhere, but I don't know where yet. But what I can do is send you the primary sources. If you want to drop me an email, right, zoorabbi@zootorah.com. I'll paste in the primary sources I quoted. MP3 download? Shalom, you know about this. Yeah, good point. It is quite a challenging topic to get your teeth into. Oh, Sean, so it's just an audio file, right? So it's not a video. It won't be a video file with the pictures and the sources and all that. The encyclopedia, okay, Torah Encyclopedia of the Animal Kingdom, something that I've been working on for many years. It's on hold. Basically, the publishing industry is in dire straits, and getting funding to publish books is very, very difficult. So the encyclopedia is on hold for now. Maybe I'll get back to it within a few years. Okay, Maharal. Yeah, Maharal has a very dismissive... Chesky asked about Maharal discussing new developments in astronomy. Maharal has a very dismissive view of Copernicus. What I want to do, I'm not exactly sure what order I'll do these classes in. You know, next week we're going to carry on with this topic. I think the week after that we'll move on to the next revolution, which is the Copernican revolution, and see how people reacted to that. And it was right now in this class we're dealing with the Ptolemaic revolution, or the transition from the ancient Babylonian cosmology to the Greek Ptolemaic cosmology. And when we're done with that topic, we'll move on to the next transition, which is a transition to the Copernican worldview. The zoology class is on Sunday. I believe it's an hour later. Maharal was not admiring about Copernicus. There was a book on Maharal and Copernicus which by André Neher, which interpreted them that way, but it was a very dishonest reading of Maharal. Maharal was very disparaging about Copernicus. Any other questions? Oh, that's it. All right. I'd really like to thank everyone for coming. I'll see you again next week. Same time, same place.